Good day, California, and indeed America, if that's where you're listening from. This is the Bankruptcy Professor. With another episode. It's been a while. It's been busy, post-holiday, busy with my day job, busy with my life, and haven't had a chance to get on here and record another podcast. But before I do, I have to give you my legal disclaimer that says, I am not a bankruptcy attorney. What I'm about to give you is not legal advice. Please do not take it that way. It is not legal advice. If you do seek legal advice, and if you're considering bankruptcy as an option, that means you should be seeking legal advice. Please do speak with a local bankruptcy attorney in your immediate area that knows your local bankruptcy rules and regulations and bankruptcy courts and trustees in your area. I highly and strongly urge you to do so. Okay, having said that, back with another podcast. And I wanted to do a quick podcast today to talk about some of the fears that people have surrounding filing for bankruptcy, and also what the aftermath really looks like, and also really hopefully sets some people's minds at ease, the fact that it's not that scary and you don't have to worry. And I find that to be a very common thing with folks out there that are in the bankruptcy process or considering bankruptcy. They get scared, they get fearful, they don't want to ruin their credit, they're afraid of going to court and talking to a judge and losing everything they own and all of these things. While I get it's a daunting concept, I can tell you, looking back now that my case is closed and I have a discharge and I have a final decree ordered by the U.S. Bankruptcy Court, there's nothing to be scared of, number one. But number two, when you look back to the process and then look back prior to filing and how scared you were or how worried you were, you look back and you'll realize how silly it was to be so scared and to be not so worried about what's to come. And the first thing I kind of want to talk about, there's a couple, but the first thing is the fear of talking to the trustee or the judge in a bankruptcy case. I've talked about this a little bit on previous episodes, but anybody that files for a bankruptcy petition in the U.S., whether that be a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13, you have to go before the bankruptcy trustee in your area. That's a common misconception. People think they have to go before a bankruptcy judge. That's a very different thing. And there are bankruptcy judges, and there are cases where people do have to go before the judge, particularly in areas where things are contested in the bankruptcy, or things, debts that you want or need to be reaffirmed in a bankruptcy, or anything that requires the judge's involvement. That is the rare exception. In a bankruptcy case, most bankruptcy cases, and I don't know the exact statistic, but it's in the 90s, 90%, 95% range, you never see a judge. You never see a judge. In fact, you only have to go to the U.S. Bankruptcy Court or trustee's office once in the whole process for the majority of cases. So number one, don't think of it, don't be fearful of a judge. You're talking to a trustee at the 341 meeting of creditors. And the trustee is not a judge. The trustee is appointed by the judge. The trustee, he or she is a lawyer, okay, representing the bankruptcy court and has been assigned your case. And they're assigned dozens and dozens of cases. So you're just one of many. And you certainly don't need to be fearful talking to another lawyer. Assuming you have legal representation, which again, I strongly recommend you do, your lawyer or somebody that works at your lawyer's office will be with you, side by side with you, sitting right next to you, talking to this other lawyer, which is the trustee. So you have support. Not only you're not talking to a judge, you're talking with your lawyer, in most cases, with you, in front of the other lawyer. So really nothing to be scared of. Okay. And I can tell you a tip that I did, and I think I might've mentioned this before, but, bankruptcy, 341 meetings of creditors are public information. You can find that list on your local bankruptcy court website, and they'll have the last name of the petitioner on there. They'll have the date, the time of the hearing, everything. And you might see, in your court, a list of maybe 12 cases at the same exact time. Maybe it's 9 a.m. and there's 12 different cases listed. Well, that's because these cases literally last 3 to 5 minutes, so they're very quick. So what you can do is you can actually go to the hearing and sit in the audience, sit in the room. You're perfectly allowed to do that, and I did it myself. So a couple of weeks before my case was being called, because you'll get notice about 45, 60 days in advance, usually about 45 days in advance of your case, after you file is your trustee hearing. Sometimes it's 30 days, but you'll get at least a month's notice of when your case is going to be called. You're at the 341 meeting of creditors and the time, the date and the time. So you'll know when that's happening. So, but a couple of weeks before, I went to watch these meetings occur. So I knew what to expect. And I even went to a meeting where I knew it was going to be the same exact trustee I was going to have at my hearing. So you'll know exactly when the trustee or what the trustee is going to ask. So I strongly urge you to do that. That's one of the best tips I can give you, because I can tell you right now, going to see what the answers to the test were, so to speak, in advance, really put my mind at ease. Number one, it showed me that this isn't that bad. And number two, you're more prepared for your own hearing because you know what questions are coming. Because what I found was the trustee asked basically the same questions to every single person. And that was true in my hearing as well. There were a couple of variances. Obviously, if the person was married or not, that there was a different question related to that, and because of joint property and things like that. But by and large, it was the same exact questions at every single hearing. And there's plenty of content on that. And I'll do another podcast in the future about what kinds of questions you might want to expect at a 341 meeting of creditors, because it is the single biggest event outside of filing your case in your entire bankruptcy. So it's important to be prepared for that, just so nothing goes wrong, like the 97% of cases out there where nothing goes wrong. And even if something does go wrong in that hearing, it's not the end of the world. It's fixable in most cases. So in fact, virtually all cases. I can't think of one off the top of my head where it's not fixable. So I'm sure there is, but I can't think of one. So don't worry. Don't be fearful of that. Don't be fearful of talking to a judge. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal to talk to another lawyer, especially when you have your partner in crime with partner in not crime, sorry, wrong term, your partner in the bankruptcy process, which is your lawyer with you to help support you. So very, very important. The second thing I wanted to mention today, regarding the fear of, filing bankruptcy cases, your credit. Okay. So if you're in a situation where you're filing for bankruptcy, your credit is almost positively trashed anyway. All right. I don't know if you've run your credit report, but if you're in a case where you are considering bankruptcy, run your credit report and see what your credit score is. It's probably not good. And if it is good, maybe you shouldn't be filing for bankruptcy. Maybe you have a different problem. That's awareness to what your real financial situation really is. But I can tell you that in most cases, you don't have a good credit score when you're considering bankruptcy, because you probably can't afford to make your debt payments. That's why you're considering bankruptcy. So you probably haven't paid the bill and you've stopped paying and it's flagged your credit and it's dropped your credit score. So the concept of ruining your credit by filing bankruptcy is really a false argument, because it's probably ruined already. And number two, if you're considering bankruptcy, you're not going to pay back that debt anyway, because you can't afford it. So don't worry about quote unquote ruining your credit when filing for bankruptcy. Yeah, it's going to drop your credit score big time, of course. but if it's already dropped, how much lower can it go, right? Now, if you have a high score in the high 700s or 750, it could drop 200 points. Okay. It could go into the high fives. But most people that are considering bankruptcy don't have a credit score in the high sevens. So, high 700s. So it's kind of a false logic. You might have a credit score that's like 620, and it drops to 580 after you file bankruptcy. That's common. But that's not that big of a drop. All right. And here's the other thing related to credit is you can rebuild that number very, very quickly, right after bankruptcy. I can tell you personally, my credit score did drop to 560. And here we are, not even a year later after I filed, and it's already a 685. Just in less than, it's 10 months. 10 months, I got it already up 100, over 100 points. Very, it's not that hard to do. So 685 is a good, is a decent score, especially with someone with a bankruptcy petition on their record, right? So you can really, really improve your credit very quickly. And I'll give you a couple tips on how to do that. Number one, if you have a credit card that's fully paid off, it's zero balance, and you have no, you're, basically you don't owe them any money, and it's open, and it's say you have a $1,200 or a $1,500 or $2,000 limit, whatever. They're not technically a creditor because you don't owe them any money, right? It may be, you may have an open credit card with them, but you don't owe them anything. So that would be a case, and lawyers will refer, that, for, refer to this as an account that survives the bankruptcy, meaning it's not included in your bankruptcy because it's, they're not a creditor. You don't owe them anything. So that account will stay open throughout your bankruptcy and actually on the other side of your bankruptcy help your credit score dramatically because they're an account in good standing that you owe $0 to but have available credit. So I would encourage you to have a couple of these. At least one, if you can. Now, this really depends on when you want to file for bankruptcy. If you're in a situation where you've got multiple credit cards and maybe you have one with a low balance and it's got a really high limit and you want to pay that off so you can let it survive the bankruptcy, you have to be careful when you pay that off versus when you file. Because if you pay it off, let's say you have a credit card with $3,000 balance or available credit and you have only a $500 balance on it, but all your other cards have $5,000 balances and you can't pay them off. But you have one that's got a small one. You can pay that off, sure, but if you pay it off within 90 days of filing, it's considered a preferential payment, meaning the bankruptcy court can actually sue that credit card company to get that $500 back to the court. So you have to be very careful when to pay it off and then file. Now, if you're thinking down the road, a year from now, 6 months from now, you're going to be filing for bankruptcy, I would pay that $500 off and, you know, wait your 6 months or a year and then, you know, consider filing because that account will still be in good standing with zero. Obviously, don't use it again. Just let it cut up the card, put it in your filing cabinet. Don't even think about it. Just leave it alone. Let it sit there on your credit report as an account in good standing that's paid off with $0. Then, when you file, it's not a creditor because you didn't have a balance due on that card, right? So, just make sure it's not timed to where you pay it off so close to the bankruptcy. You can't do that. It has to, I would say 6 months at least is safe. Maybe a year is better. That way, you don't have any preferential payment concerns. It really depends also how much you're paying off because if you're talking about a larger amount, it could affect the trustee's viewpoint. And honestly, I would strongly recommend over 6 months because here's why. The trustee will likely ask for the last 6 months of bank statements. And you know, you'll want to ensure that everything in the last 6 months is pretty clean and on the up and up on your bank statements. You're obviously buying things, you know, food and, you know, household supplies and clothing for kids and paying for school and, you know, all the, everything that, you know, utilities and house payments and all of the normal things, right? None of that's a problem. But if you're, if talking about paying a creditor $1,500, the trustee could have a problem with that. And certainly within 90 days, it's actually illegal under the bankruptcy code in the sense that it could be, it could jeopardize your case. So you definitely want to make sure that it's an extended time frame before you file. But that's a good way to keep credit after your bankruptcy. Okay, you have an account or two that survives the bankruptcy. And then when you're post bankruptcy, you can when as soon as you get your discharge, okay, which usually comes within a few months after filing, you can apply for new credit. And there are creditors out there that will give you credit. Even when your case is open, still. Okay. And I'm talking about unsecured credit, meaning a new credit card with just a signature to your name that I'm going to pay back this debt. I'm not talking about secured credit, like cars, property credit. If you go out and buy a new car, number one, don't do that. Number two, you can do that because it's a secured loan. So dealerships love people that just have bankruptcy discharges because their debt's wiped out and they're a good candidate from a credit perspective to pay back the loan. And if you don't, they'll just take the car back. So secured loans are easy to get. Secured car loans are easy to get during and after a bankruptcy because of that reason. Don't do it. You should save up money and pay cash for a car so you don't have to deal with more debt after your bankruptcy. That's the whole idea, is to get rid of it, right? So, but I'm talking about unsecured credit card, and there's a couple of good ones out there. And I'm not being paid by any of these companies to say their brand names, so this is not a sponsorship thing. But Capital One has a credit program that I think it's their Platinum MasterCard that you can apply for during a bankruptcy, and if you've got a good enough credit profile post discharge, they will give you a credit card. They will give it to you. I got one. So I would encourage you to look at that, because that will also help you rebuild your credit very quickly. Another thing I did is I took out a $1,000 personal loan, unsecured. I found a creditor that would loan me $1,000, and it was actually post discharge, so after I got the discharge. And it was the website is Lending Club. They're based in San Francisco. They are a crowd lending provider, meaning they have investors that pony up the money, and they get a share of the investment and interest. So they will give you, sometimes if your credit profile is good enough, they'll give you a small loan, and they'll charge a fee. But to me, it's kind of like a cost of doing business thing, meaning in order to get my credit score up, I got to pay a small fee, which is fine. So here's what I did. I took out the $1,000, I parked it in my savings account, didn't touch it. Okay. I paid for the first 3 months, I just paid the regular payment just to keep it on my credit report as a live debt. And then the next 3 months after that, I did double payments. Okay. And then I sent them a lump sum to pay it off from that $1,000 balance I had. So obviously, in the interest you make in a savings is not going to recoup the entire fee associated with that, but it's going to, it'll help a little bit. But you'll definitely want to pay it off early, and I would say about 6 months is about right. And that way, it lives on your credit report for 6 months, and then it shows as a paid off loan at the end. That will also help your credit score by a few points for sure. If you have to be disciplined with the money, don't spend it. Leave it alone, but pay it back within 6 months. Just give it right back to them, and it'll report to the credit bureaus as a positive, excuse me, as a positive, mark on your credit. So now you're talking about a couple of cards that survived bankruptcy, right? That you've had open, hopefully at least one. And then you've got another unsecured card that you open post bankruptcy, and then you paid back a personal loan all within 6 months of discharge. Your credit score is going to jump. And it's exactly what I did, and my credit score jumped. So my point in telling you all this with the credit is don't be scared about ruining your credit. Yeah, it's going to go down, but you can get it right back up again. Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to make sure you understand that. And then the last thing I want to talk about is mortgage post bankruptcy. Okay. So if you're looking at buying a house post bankruptcy, the federal loans, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, conventional loans, FHA loans, USDA loans, VA loans, all of those loans that are federally backed by the federal government, will be very challenging to get, okay, within the first few years after bankruptcy. That is a fact. There's no way around that. All right. So be mindful of that if you're going to file. If you want to buy a house in a couple of years, you're going to have to do it through what they call a non-prime lender. Used to be called subprime. So history is starting to repeat itself with that. And you're starting to see non-prime lending programs come back. Okay. Now, the reason why they're better, for the economy than they were in the 2008-2009 debacle with the subprime credit situation, is they require higher down payments than before, because there were subprime loans given out in the financial crisis of the Great Recession that were, you know, basically on zero down payments, in some cases, or very low down payments. They're not doing that anymore. Even non-prime loans, where you have high interest rates, 6-7% interest rates, it's, you know, the best possible scenario you're looking at is at least 10% down, and most of them are closer to 15-20% down. I've even some as high as 30% down. So you have to come up with a chunk of money to put down if you want to buy a house and get a mortgage with that. And it's possible. It's possible. Even if you're one day out of bankruptcy, there are non-prime programs, especially if you've got 20% or more down payment saved up to buy a house on a mortgage after bankruptcy. Absolutely. Right after bankruptcy. There are programs out there that exist. So don't let people tell you you can't. You just have to do it through a non-prime program. And there are a multitude of non-prime lenders out there that will offer this program. So look into that. Dig deep. The internet's a great resource. So look into it. But don't expect to go get a conventional loan through Wells Fargo or Bank of America. That's, you're going to take a while. In most cases, it's like 4 years. FHA, it's at least two. So it's, you know, obviously if you're going to wait 5 years to buy a house, no problem. You're not going to have a problem. You know, you can go get any loan you want, probably. It might be a little higher interest rate because you got a bankruptcy on there on your credit score or credit report, but you can, 5 years, you're good. Okay. And if you're going to rent for 5 years and then buy something, you've got no problems. So there's no issue with, you know, filing for bankruptcy if that's your plan. The only concern is if you want to buy something right after you file, a year after you file, say, or less than a year after your discharge, that kind of thing. And I say this because this can come up with individuals where jobs are relocating, okay, to where your company asks you to move and you have to, you know, buy your house or sell your house or that kind of thing. Now, if you're going to sell your old property and you've got enough equity in it to pay 20% or more down payment on a new house in a new area, you're still fine. You'll have to go on a non-prime program for the first, you know, year or two to where you have a high interest rate, but you can still get a house, you know. So the challenge would be if you're not going to sell your house and you want to rent it out or something and you're relocating and you got to come up with a lump sum of money for a down payment, that's where it can get tricky. So be prepared to look at rental options post-bankruptcy if you need to. Just don't count out the fact that, don't let anyone tell you can't do it, because there are programs that, like I said, that you can, provided you have a strong enough down payment to do it. So anyway, I hope those things help you today a little bit, get over some of the fears with related to credit scores and the bankruptcy trustee and the judge and also buying a home after bankruptcy. All of this is possible to improve and to put your mind at ease. And I look forward to talking more about some of these topics in the future. If you'd like to support the podcast, we'd so much appreciate it. anchor.fm/bankruptcyprofessor. You can go on there and include your donation to support the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at BK Professor CA on Twitter. You can also email me at bankruptcyprofessor@gmail.com. And obviously, depending on the support of the podcast, we'll continue to evolve it and try to do more of them. Ideally, I love to get on a weekly cadence where I can do at least one a week. And if it gets strong enough in demand, we'll do one every day. But to the point where we're at now, we have to look at what's realistic and what I can do and have time for. And also, you know, hopefully in the future, our long-term aspiration is to get our website integrated with the platform, independent of other platforms, and also look at how we can have a presence out there in social media a little bit bigger to help others with their bankruptcy situation. Because the whole idea for me is, and my goal is, to help others that are experiencing bankruptcy issues or are in the bankruptcy process, help kind of get through some of the noise that you see on the internet and clarify some things for everybody. So keep the questions coming at bankruptcyprofessor@gmail.com. If I get enough, I'll do a whole podcast just answering questions for you guys. Looking forward to future podcasts. So thanks, everybody. Good day, California, and indeed America, if that's where you're listening from.